Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 53, and win number 4 in a row, and win number 8 is in the books, Dave, as the Le'Veon Bell Show took place up in Orchard Park, New York yesterday, as the Steelers, I think it's fair to say, completely dominated the Buffalo Bills. There were some turnovers in this game that kept the Bills in it. The Bills got some late scores, a little bit like the Giants did last week, but it never felt like it was in doubt, and there was a ton of good to take away from this, and the concern with Ben Roethlisberger on the road is still a concern with Ben Roethlisberger on the road.
Yeah, three not-so-great interceptions. Of course, when is a interception great, you know? But the first two, I thought, and I have yet to hear Roethlisberger talk about what happened on those plays. Perhaps he'll do so on his radio show on Tuesday. But looked like he was off page with Antonio Brown and Ladarius Green on those first two. The last one was just really a bad throw to Jesse James in the end zone there. And in total, probably if you go back and watch play by play, Roethlisberger probably should have had 5 or 6 interceptions in this game. He got away with a few of them there. Thank goodness for Le'Veon Bell. Thank goodness for that offensive line, because when you look at it as a whole, it kind of felt like it should have been a 42-13 game. Instead, you had a 7-point game at 27-20. But much needed win on the road in less than favorable weather conditions. I was worried about how the defense would handle that Bills running game. They more than passed the test. Sure, the passing game, you'll look at the defensive adjusted net yards numbers after the game and say, boy, it doesn't look too good, and that was mostly the result of the final two drives. And a lot to criticize, but a lot to praise, as well, when it comes to this team and the outcome of this game.
I didn't see a lot to criticize, to be honest with you. I thought this was a really good all-around performance. I mean, look, Ben didn't play well, but there are not many other guys on that list for me.
Yeah, I thought, some late missed tackles in the game, some guys gambling to make some plays. The yak is what really hurt the Steelers on those final two or three drives there. I think some minor gaffes. I think I saw on a defensive line with some of the younger players there. I won't know for sure until the all 22 comes out. But look, I mean, like you said, you hold a guy like Shady McCoy to the yardage that you held him in that game. that's absolutely fantastic performance there. And same with Tyrod Taylor. Going into this game, you worried about him getting out of the pocket and escaping. He only had 3 rushes for 2 total yards. Most of it was spent kind of running for his life, if you will. Tyrod Taylor came into this game with the highest, longest snap to release time in the NFL. I don't see that decreasing this past week or what happened on Sunday, because he sure held on to the football a long time. Ben's performance on offense is the easiest of the ones to criticize here, and we'll see what he has to say later on in the week. But not a lot of bad, but I mean, it certainly wasn't a perfect performance.
Okay, let's get to the injury report. And really, the Steelers have, knock on wood, have been relatively fortunate out of these last few games. Now, again, last game we knew there were two concussions, and we didn't know anything about the Ramon Foster injury really until Thursday. because it was not it was said it was kind of a Veterans Day off when Foster didn't practice Wednesday. So not the be all end all. We haven't even heard the Tuesday press conference. But Mike Mitchell left the game. It sounded like Mike Mitchell, even though he jogged on and off the field to go into the locker room, I assume, for x-rays or to get taped. It sounded like he had put his sweats on over his football pants, which when you do that, generally that means your day's over. But Mike Mitchell was back in there and played fine. And, Dave, I was a little concerned because, as I think we've mentioned over the past week or two, Mike Mitchell has been an invaluable part of this defense and kind of the character of this defense, setting the tone back there, playing smart football over the past 6 weeks. And he was able to come back in. And nothing else of note in terms of anything I saw or Mike Tomlin mentioned after the game in terms of guys dinged up. So the inactives we can get into, that was a little bit of surprising. We saw the Steelers go with the big insurance policy by dressing both kickers, which meant Randy Bullock was dressed but did not participate in this game. I imagine he will be released today. And that'll open up a roster spot, obviously. I would think that's how they would go about it. We've seen in weeks past that they've done things slightly differently. But that opens up a roster spot. And then the other thing was Foster was obviously down in a great game for the offensive line. And B.J. Finney was part of that as much as anybody, as he had another really solid effort kind of solidifying his role as eventually a starter on this line, whether that's a year or two or 3 years from now when Ramon Foster's no longer the guy at left guard. But, really just on the injury front, positive general news.
Yeah, I think really the only surprise on the inactives was Darrell Richardson being down in lieu of a guy like Randy Bullock. I understand why they did that. In my Saturday night predictions of the inactives, I had Bullock down and Darrell Richardson dressing. So we'll see. Javon Hargrave reportedly was not even close to being able to play, even though he ended the week listed as doubtful with his concussion. He's still reportedly in concussion protocol. We'll have to see what happens with Darius Heyward-Bey and D'Angelo Williams. I tend to lean to thinking maybe Darius Heyward-Bey comes back for the game against the Ravens in a few weeks. That's totally speculation on my part. D'Angelo Williams was able to go limited a couple of times this past week, so that's obviously a good sign, another step closer for him. Foster down with that chest, reportedly took a helmet to the chest in the game against the Giants a week ago there. Boy, B.J. Finney, second start at left guard, if people remember back to the start against the Kansas City Chiefs. He played great in that game, and he played great in this game against the Bills. Now, however, and I don't want to take anything away from it because I think he would have played well anyway. Kyle Williams, what was inactive for the Bills on Sunday because of his back evidently locking up. I think it was on Friday there. It would have been fun to watch B.J. Finney go against a guy like Kyle Williams. But Finney outside, what did he have? A couple of penalties, I think, in the game.
He did have a couple of penalties. He had a false start out of a timeout, and I think he had a holding call.
Yeah, I'm not ready to. that's part of it. Those things are going to happen at times. You really hated to see the false start coming out of the timeout like that. But boy, a couple of those running plays, Finney really looked strong. And when you talk about compares, I know the narrative right now is going to be Wally Pipp. Wally Pipp.
Yeah, and we're I got asked by, I'm sure you did, a bunch of people saying, he should stay in as the starter. It's just, as much as people may, first of all, Ramon Foster's had a really good year. There's no chance if Foster's healthy that he's not the starter.
Yeah, absolutely not. Look, it's be thankful that you have a guy like B.J. Finney that can come in off the bench and give you a quality start like that. Is he more mobile out in space than Foster is? Absolutely, he is.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, that's an important thing. It's not to be ignored thinking about the team going forward, but.
I mean, how nice is it to be able to see you be able to pull your left guard to the right side with and be effective doing it. You know, that look, I'm a big Ramon Foster fan. In fact, top to bottom, once again this season, Ramon Foster's probably been your most consistent offensive lineman. And that will probably go down when we when 5 years from now when we're talking about Ramon Foster, 10 years from now, when we're talking about Ramon Foster, we're always gonna say, well, he was just so damn consistent. And that's what's going to keep him in this lineup right now. At one point, will B.J. Finney be the starter? More than likely. But Ramon Foster's understanding and ability to pick up, twists and stunts and all like that, which I don't think we saw a whole heck of a lot of out of the Bills yesterday. Just, you know, like I said, be thankful you got a great quality starter out of B.J. Finney. Yes, he's the more active of the two, but I just don't see Ramon Foster being benched.
Okay, let's get to the Steeler fans. Mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxham from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Let's get to the Le'Veon Bell show. And a couple explosive runs in this one. One for 32, I think, and one for 20-something. Just, you know, getting 8 yards seemingly every time he touched the football. Four catches for another 62 yards. 298 total yards of offense. Just 8 off the Steelers' single-game record of 306 set by Antonio Brown. 3 touchdown runs, all of which were somewhat walk-in touchdowns. The first one, I guess, wasn't a walk-in touchdown. Certainly the third one was, as he had Finney in there. He had DeCastro and Rosie Nix out there. Everything we've been kind of waiting for on the explosive side of Le'Veon Bell, we saw. And it really started with the pass catch early that he took for 33 yards down the right sideline when he looked like he was bottled up inside on a short third down. It might not even have been that short a third down. Maybe early in that game. And he went for 33. So I don't know what to say. His yards from scrimmage now, Dave. I've been looking at this number for a while. He's now fourth. He's third in the NFL in yards from scrimmage, trailing only Ezekiel Elliott by 98 yards and David Johnson by about 200 yards. But in yards per scrimmage per game, yards per game from the line of scrimmage, the top four in reverse order are DeMarco Murray at 111.1. Ezekiel Elliott at 131.8, so a big 20-yard jump to Ezekiel Elliott. Another 9-yard jump to David Johnson at 140.8. And then Le'Veon Bell at 161.6. He's averaging 21 more yards per game than David Johnson from the line of scrimmage, who's second. And if he had that pace for the whole season, he would break Chris Johnson's single season record of 25.09. He's not going to break that because he's obviously suspended the first three games, but we're seeing historic stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you go back, the runs I was most or the touches I was most impressed by happened on that first drive, on that third and 10, when it looked like, you know, the pass to the right hand side where it looked like he was, destined to be tackled early. The little dump pass caught at, I think it was at 32. Tremendous effort. I mean, to get 32 yards on that play. And then what was it? Two plays later on the runoff right tackle for 16 yards. I think if you only watched those two plays on that first drive, you think, man, what an incredible effort, what an incredible back. I mean, you didn't even have to see the rest of it. Now, he obviously had some other great runs. I think there was one, early second half? It looked like he was the only one that had snow tires on in the second half. Some of those cuts he was making, then of course he lowered the boom on one of those down the right sideline, kind of. I think that was in the second half as well, too.
Oh, it was late. I actually tweeted on that one. I said, "Hey, Lev, it's okay if you step out of bounds there. You've already killed this team.
Yeah,
you don't need." You know, between the jump, which he must have hurt him 5 feet, probably, it felt like, where he went down hard. And that play, I was like, ugh. I wasn't for taking him out. I saw you comment on that. That game was not over. It's a two-score game. I wasn't for taking him out. But you did hope that he didn't do something crazy.
It was incredible. The amount. I mean, there had to be, I think, five different people on Twitter at one time hollering for the Steelers to get Le'Veon Bell out of the game.
Well, I had five more then, and I had, you know, I even saw some media people saying it.
I mean, I don't. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, it was still a two score game. You want your best player in there. You want to be able to grind out, you know, these yards and you know, hold on to the football. And sure, I know Le'Veon Bell has had a fumbling part, but that game, you don't remove a guy in a situation like that. You know, I just did not understand the thinking of some of these people on Twitter. You have to win now, okay? I mean, there is no saving players if you don't win now. It's not a luxury situation that the Steelers are in. It just floored me.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I don't think that was ever going to be the question. You know, it would have been, look, okay, so Le'Veon Bell did everything well. The offensive line was fantastic. That's the third game out of four without a sack. AB makes a really good catch down the sideline. I will say the play that they ran, you know, the other play where he had man coverage on the outside because they filled the box and he gained like 25 yards, also a good call, good play. I don't want it to say Ben did everything wrong. The fourth down call to David Johnson that he obviously called the play.
That audible was fantastic.
Yeah, that was fantastic. He made some good throws, but it was a bad day for Ben. I mean, let's not sugarcoat this, and I'm with you. I don't know on the Ladarius Green one, Charlie Batts said on the post game that on that route, when he turns inside, that means you sit. So he put it on Green, and I think that's probably right. He said if he turns outside, he can stretch it to the outside, but you can't turn inside and then stretch it on the outside. He said, at least, you know, that's the terminology and the lingo that he was giving me as a cue. Obviously, it was hard to tell whether Ben tried to start pulling that thing down because Green moved to the last second, or if it slipped out of his hand, or there was just a miscommunication. But he went right back to him in terms of, you know, keeping him in the game plan. So we'll chalk that up, one up to miscommunication. With AB, we're not used to seeing that down the field like that, but that was a bad setup for the Steelers. Kobe Hamilton on the field late. The only guy in the pattern was AB, and just, you know, clearly a bad throw, bad route. Something went wrong there. The one that bothered me,
on that play too, David, if you're going to call pass interference on Artie Burns on that pick six, yeah. How are you not going to call kind of the same? I mean, go look at the release and the coverage on both those routes, talking about the pick six that was called back, and then the interception on the throw to AB. I mean, look, I'm not like to watch these guys play, and I like to see the battles up the field, kind of old school. But all I ask is that you be kind of consistent. And I thought, man, how couldn't you call this one and not call that one? But yeah, look, I'm not ready to call for Ben Roethlisberger's benching in favor of Landry Jones because of those first two picks. The third one, maybe.
The third one, I just don't get the third one, because that's a throw that Ben doesn't have trouble making. I mean, he makes that throw as well as anybody. That's just a touch pass over the top. If he throws it to the back of the end zone, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I don't know, you know, well, again, we'll talk Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll hear how the glove impacted him, how the weather impacted him. Again, I don't know if it didn't come out clean, but Jesse James was wide open. I mean, he just had to get it up in the air, and that's a touchdown.
Yeah, it looked like that ball had a little lead in it, didn't it?
At that point,
because not much touch to it, and it looked like it kind of sank right away. I don't know. I mean, but that should have been a touch. And look at that was a crazy sequence there as well, right? That was the sequence.
Take points off the board.
Yeah, that was the sequence where you take points off the board, and then didn't the Bills decline a penalty in there somewhere?
Yeah, you're right. Rex declined. Rex wanted to decline the penalty on a, which is very unusual down inside field goal range to see teams do that. And then, of course, the interception. And look, I get everybody's idea of, well, why not just keep running Le'Veon Bell? And that's an absolutely fine comment to make before and after. The only thing I'll tell you is the play was wide open. Ben just didn't execute it. So, you know, I'm not going to kill the play call because, if he makes it just an average throw, it's an easy touchdown. So they had the play there. They just didn't execute.
Absolutely. And, boy, how lucky were – I mean, that's the thing that kept the Bills in this game, right? I mean, you give a
– Yeah, if people are worried about Le'Veon Bell carrying it 38 times, well – you know, if they didn't do some of the things they did in terms of the turnovers, then, you know, that game, yeah, I mean, it could have been 14-0 right out of the chute. So, okay, that's a holding call you can make on any play, or whatever they want to call it. I don't know, they call PI or defensive pass interference or holding. I can't remember. But you could call that. It wasn't a bad call. It's, you know, he did hold him. But, I mean, like I said, we see it all the time. So, okay, so that comes back. You know, the touchdowns, the interceptions, I mean, deep in their territory. And by the way, just to be, you know, honest about this, is we're talking about Eli could have had 6 turnovers last night. Ben threw 2 other balls where he didn't see the safety that absolutely could have been picked off. Now, one of them was on the same drive as an interception already. So, you know, you're not going to get intercepted twice on the same drive. But he threw balls that could have been picked, you know, easily 5.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting. I wrote last night on Twitter, I want to see some of these coverages that he saw on some of these plays. So that'll be fun when the all 22 comes out to see.
Didn't see the safety again, right?
Right. I mean, that's what it looked like initially on a few of those. The one
in the back of the end zone that was dropped where the two guys hit each other, and then the one on the goal line, right? He didn't get. Just seemed like he didn't see the guy coming the other way.
Yeah, I want to see if they showed something and then rotate. You know, I want to see how they rotate, and maybe he missed. Missed. I mean, that's what it looked like initially. Let's go back a little bit to the elephant in the room, or not so much elephant in the room in the room, but kind of the fan narrative when it comes to Le'Veon Bell and the extended amount of work. And I'm going to sort of jump on their side of the fence just for sake to create some discussion here. Le'Veon Bell now has 218 carries on the season. You add in 67 receptions on top of it, and he's closing in on very close to 300 total touches. How concerned are you with him hitting that 300 carry number? Which, you know, there's a decent – he's probably not going to hit it, especially if D'Angelo Williams makes it back for these final 3 games. But how concerned are you that he might hit that magic 300 number of carries?
Not at all. I mean, I'm with Mike Tomlin on this. I mean, I just don't think you go into games or look at week to week and say, you know, I'm going to worry about this guy getting hurt. I mean, there were huge holes in this game. He was beating guys. He looks great. They were having fun out there. I think the weather probably made it a little bit even more fun, as did the scoreboard, obviously. Yeah, he took some hits. It's going to happen in every NFL game. And certainly the next 2 weeks are going to be punishing games for sure. I'm worried about him. But I would, you know, this guy, how old is Le'Veon Bell? Is he 24? Hand him the football, man. He's doing amazing stuff. Let him keep doing it.
Yeah, you don't reduce carries just because you worried about what's going to happen next year or you know the effects, especially for a guy right now who's not even under contract next year. Look, you know, I think as we've talked a lot last several weeks about Le'Veon Bell and his future and presenting the argument, you know, how fungible are running backs actually. Look, I mean, Le'Veon Bell's a special dude, and I've said that all along. It was just kind of an argument to put out there. With that said, look, he's gonna get the franchise tag. I mean, everybody would be surprised if he does. Then comes the question of, can you sign him to a long term deal with guaranteed money that kind of reduces the risk moving forward. He's worth the money. I've never said that he's not worth the money. It just becomes the guaranteed part of it that goes along with it. I mean, if he stays healthy and can play in all 16 games, I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, 1,000 yards rushing on the ground already and another 500 through the air. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, 3,000 total yards is a possibility for a guy like this if he stays healthy, right?
3,000?
Yeah, 3,000 total yards in a season. Is that possible for a guy like this if he plays in all 16 games?
I don't, you know, that's with the NFL record being 2509, that is such a massive amount more that, you know, I don't know that that's possible. I think he can break the NFL record. I mean, he's already put up a season where he's had, you know, 2200, I think, in 2014 or maybe 2300. I don't know that 3,000 is doable, but I mean, look, he's on pace. At the pace he's on in a season, he'd be at 2,600. 2,600 is a pretty extraordinary number. I don't know that he's ever going to be on much of a pace above that, but. He's doing great. Yeah, like, you know, he's doing great stuff, and the offense now has. Well, let's talk a little bit, Dave, about how the offense evolved yesterday. They come out yesterday. The first six plays are pass plays. They come out in the second half. The first six plays are run plays. I think they threw the ball one time in the third quarter. And that was a completion to Kobe Hamilton on third down. Do you look in hindsight and say the Steelers had a faulty game plan to start the game? And I'll just throw my thoughts out here. Kyle Williams wasn't on the injury report until Friday. And the Steelers knew that there might be a chance of inclement weather. But I think you and I both said, you know, the Steelers are going to be able to throw the ball on these guys if the weather's okay. And Ben did turn it over. So I don't want to downplay the risk of interceptions when you're throwing the football. But it's not like they got stopped throwing the ball either.
Right. I mean, look, I mean, his first – and part of throwing the football is dumping the ball off to the running back. So, you know, how many of those were there in the first half? You know, so sure, a couple not-so-great throws over the head of who – he overthrew what? Ladarius and I think Antonio Brown on one of those quick screens off to the left side there. You know, once again, it's going to be one of these when you go back through the film and the all 22 and go through it, would find detail. Were they daring him to throw? You know, because you had to think that just as the Steelers went into the game with the defensive mindset, we got to stop Shady McCoy and Tyrod Taylor from running the football. Yeah, with it snowing the way it was and all like that, don't you come out defensively if you're the Bills like you're going to stop Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, I think you do, and I didn't have any problem with the game plan. Them coming out throwing, certainly.
If that pass to Ladarius Green is not intercepted, what are the odds are that drive finishes in a touchdown despite all the passing? I mean, it's a lot of ifs there, I know, and people probably say,
well, the point is they were moving the ball.
Right, moving the ball exactly. And second and five, people say, well, Ben had no business throwing on second and five. They should have ran Le'Veon Bell in that situation. Well, yeah, it's always fun to look at those things, armchair quarterback, after plays happen like that. But, yeah, I mean, I had no – was I glad as the game, especially in the second half, was I glad to see them running it more, especially when, I mean, the offensive line and those heavy packages were just – I mean, they were – you want to talk about imposing will. I mean, that was imposing – that was smell-the-glove territory right there.
Yeah, so, okay. So we've talked a lot about the offense, and, you know, we'll say, you know, Kobe only had the one target. He caught it. Eli had three targets, all kind of short stuff. He caught all three targets, so they were in there. Sammy Coates, zero targets again. It's still the most
– one snap.
How many? One?
He played one more than you did, David, on offense.
Yeah. So that's the most – and I'm going to ask Mike about that again tomorrow. I mean, it is by far the most mystifying – bewildering thing about this Steelers season as it goes on here, because by all accounts, and, you know, I had, Mark Caboli's with me on my show on Fridays, and he said, you know, he's there every week, he's practicing, he is catching balls, he's running routes, he's making plays in practice. So the idea that, oh, it's his broken fingers, he can't catch the ball, well, that doesn't seem to match up with what's happening in practice. So my question to Mike will be, Mike, is it still Sammy Coates' injury that is keeping him off the field? Is that why he's, you know, playing so few snaps? Is it injury related still? Because it doesn't seem that that's the case. So anyway, the offense fine the rest of the way. The defense, Dave, Bud Dupree's best game as a pro, which superseded anything Jarvis Jones has done in his career. Sean Davis gets better every week. Artie makes another big play, and I thought he played pretty well. And just let the defense look. You're right about the missed tackle. Shazier missed a tackle on Shady on that last drive, and they inexplicably left the middle of the field open a couple times, which seemed odd. But I think you saw 55 minutes or 52 minutes of outstanding defense. If you know, four first quarter or first half sacks, they were, you know, four sacks on the first six dropbacks. Taylor's an elusive guy, and I know you time some of these, and he holds it forever, and you know that was part of the reason they got the sacks. But man, they look good.
Yeah, they did. And I wrote in one of these tweets this morning, holds up four fingers, because you got to play all four quarters. Now, did they kind of lay off a little bit there in those final two drives? Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it certainly appears that way. And I'm trying to. The Bills had 162 yards on offense on final two possessions, which was over half of what they had for the entire game. So that tells you something right there. They gave up a lot of yak there on the.
Wait, they had 162 yards in their last two drives, the two touchdown drives?
Yes, final two possessions.
And then throw in 34 yards at the end of the first half on Gillespie's two runs. And that's what, 196 yards. What'd they end up with? 280?
Yeah, I think if you add passing and rushing stats, not net, I think it's right around 300, right?
Yeah, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was a solid performance. That's why I say this is one of those times where the adjusted net yards per passing attempt number is not going to reflect what happened in the game. That number was 6.77 for the game, and you say, oh man, that's way too high. But I mean, if you watch the game, you know, and even if you were given the privilege of looking at the stat sheet, you say, oh, I see what happened on those final two drives there. You know, you're so concerned about not giving up the big play that sometimes you end up giving up the big play, right? You know, and
yeah, I mean, they did give up. Look, they played fast. They were aggressive. I mean, the three guys I mentioned were outstanding. Shazier was outstanding. LT Walton, let's give LT Walton a nod. Did really solid effort again. Tua, it was a beast. You know, I feel like if I don't mention somebody, I'm doing a disservice. But just it was a really good defensive effort. And yeah, they'd like to have the last 7 or 8 minutes back, I'm sure. But you know, they did what they had to do.
You know, I go back to what I said several weeks ago when talking about Sean Davis and Artie Burns. Boy, how nice is it to get the, you know, be able to get them snaps and win in the process? Well, against the Bills, you were missing, you know, you're already without Cameron Hayward for the rest of the season, and then you're missing, you know, a guy that's played well in the last couple weeks in Javon Hargrave. So then you're left. And look, I thought Ricardo Matthews played decent in relief of Hargrave against the Giants. But now he's thrust into a starting role. And then they were so confident in their four guys that they did not promote Keshad Lyons from the practice squad on Saturday. And I got to admit, I was a bit surprised by that, because not only do the Steelers like to keep six healthy defensive linemen on their 53-man roster, they normally like to dress five of those guys on Sunday. So for them to go into that game with Matthews, McCullers, and LT Walton, that says a lot about their confidence, I think. It's not like Keshad Lyons was probably going to play a lot of snaps. And the thing with Lyons, LT Walton that stuck out. Look, he had a nice tackle for loss on kind of a he was kind of a cleanup guy, I think, on that play. But can't fault him for that. The thing that stuck out in my first couple times through the tape with LT Walton, running after the football and staying off the ground. You do those two things,
John Mitchell will get you on the field.
John Mitchell probably trying to get you on. Because, look, you remember, you go back to that game, David, last year against the Chiefs when when McCullers and Walton had to play a lot of snaps in that game. The thing that stayed along with Cam Thomas, a lot of guys on the ground, a lot of guys not running after the football in those instances. And I think the biggest thing that stood out to me about LT Walton, and look, we'll look at it closer here over the next couple of days, but running after the football was very impressive in that area. McCullers only played 18 snaps. I think Walton only played 18 snaps, but initial viewing, I wasn't a lot to be upset about as a whole.
How many defensive snaps were there? About 55, 60?
Wasn't there like 50, 55 or 56 until 52 defensive snaps?
Yeah, they didn't have time of possession. When you get it 38-40 for the Steelers, it's hard to have too many. So 18, that's a third of the snaps. That sounds about right.
Yeah, 35% on that. And boy, where did the outside linebacker rotation go?
Yeah, how about that? How about that? And you know what? It worked. So
absolutely. Now the question is,
Bud Dupree was. I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit with my calls on Bud Dupree and Ladarius Green being big contributors down the stretch. And obviously they did it. But I just felt like these guys were going to come in more so Green for sure, because you know I don't know what we could make out of Bud Dupree from what we saw last year, but that was impressive.
I thought he was better. I thought he was better against the run than he was the pass, to be honest with you. I mean, I know you have that number two in the sack column there, and that'll get everybody excited. But you go back and look at the times of those snaps: 6 seconds and 9 seconds. Look, the one on the 9 second one, he almost had one at three. Yeah, you because know, he was kind of the first guy in there.
Right, right. Yeah, that's when he broke six tackles.
Right, right. He had a whole pin.
I mean, that was an amazing play. I mean, he Tyrod Taylor broke six tackles, and then, you know, finally Dupree gets him from the backside.
Yeah, I thought my biggest takeaway from Bud Dupree in this game, David, was, man, does he have the right shoes on? because it looked like he was sliding and going past a lot of plays. I'll put it to you this way. Look, it wasn't an awful game by Bud Dupree, but I wasn't impressed by it as you were.
Okay, fair enough. A couple things here now. Let's talk about where the Steelers are and what's going on. You know, they retained that aggressive posture defensively. That's gonna, that looks like it is gonna be what it is. Special teams was, we haven't mentioned Rosie Nix probably. We talked about, he was clearing things out in the run game, made two big tackles in special teams. Chicolo and Dangerfield made another. So special teams was better in this one. Things are all pointing in the right direction for this team. And now, you've got the game tonight that everybody's going to be paying attention to. Are the Steelers the favorite in the AFC now?
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far just yet. And by the way, yeah, we do need to take our hat off and hand it to Rosie Nix. that dude likes to block.
that dude, 45. He was killing.
That people. Dude, that defensive back on that walk-in touchdown wanted no part of that. What was coming there, and DeCastro out front on that one as well too. What does it say about a team? And Todd Haley was asked about the challenges of playing so many tight ends this past week, and he says, that it's a great problem to have. What does it say when a team can roll out heavy packages like that, a couple of weeks in a row, and say, okay, here it is. It's coming. What are you going to do about it? In fact, you go back to that early couple of first possessions there and say, why didn't they go heavy a little bit more? I mean, we saw a lot of Chris Hubbard in this game, 30 snaps. I can just read them off to you. Jesse James, 50 snaps. Ladarius Green, 28 snaps. What else? David Johnson, 22 snaps in this game. Roosevelt Nix, 25 snaps. I mean, you got a lot of heavy personnel going in that game, and there wasn't a damn thing that the Buffalo Bills could do about it. When you get into December football and you get into playoff football, when you're going to have some instances where there might be some bad weather, that's not bad. That's not bad right there. As far as them being favorites in the AFC, David, let's see what happens tonight in this game against the Patriots and the Ravens. It's going to be a good defense going up against a good offense, and a good offense without Rob Gronkowski. And say what you will, I've been all over the Ravens offense early on in the season. They seem to bring it together a little bit in that game against the Dolphins last week.
They were really good. That's, to me, by far the most interesting thing about tonight's game is see what happens with the Ravens offense.
Do the Steelers deserve to be right up in there to I don't want to have to go to Heinz Field and play these guys in the playoffs? If there's a category for that, absolutely.
No, I'm with you. Look, you look at this now, and the interesting thing is in the NFC, all the teams on the bubble kind of, they all won. Green Bay looked great doing it. In the AFC, they all won but Denver. And Denver finishes with New England at home and Oakland and Kansas City on the road. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be 8-8, and that's going to very potentially open the door for the team in the AFC North. And by the way, that potentially opens the door for Steelers-Ravens at Heinz Field, first round, a rematch of the 2014 playoff game. Because now, the number one playoff seed's coming out of the West on who doesn't win the division between Oakland and Kansas City, the number one wild card. And that leaves the number two wild card is Miami, who's now quarterback. You know, Matt Moore, my man Matt Moore, gets his chance. Denver or Baltimore. Those look to be one of the three teams that would come to Heinz Field if, okay, of course, with the huge caveat of the Steelers have to run the table here and win the division. There is an outside chance. They could be the two seed, but it's a pretty outside chance.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody should just be hoping that they win the division right now. I mean, you got a big game coming up, obviously for the Ravens tonight. Then you got the Ravens on Christmas. You know, a lot of people saying, is there a chance that both Pittsburgh and Baltimore make the playoffs? Sure, there is, but I think if that happens, if that happens, then that means that Baltimore's at least beat the Patriots tonight, or at worst beat the Steelers on Christmas. I still think the Ravens are going to flounder here and not make it in. Now, as far as who comes out, look, Kansas City or Oakland are getting in, right? I mean, we both agree on that. The question is what can Denver do? That Denver defense, to me, is just good, is good enough to obviously they had their issues yesterday, but I still think it's three teams, David, that come out of that AFC West, and then of course the rest of your division winners. What's going to be fun to watch is that what happens in this AFC South the rest of the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, so Denver, they got New England at home, and then they're at Kansas City and at Oakland, and huge games for those two teams. You think they're going to win two of those three games?
I think they can. I mean, you get after Tom Brady, right? I mean, this is the same defense that got after Tom Brady last year, right?
Yeah, well, they got after Marcus Mariota and held him to 88 yards yesterday, and they couldn't win because their offense stinks. So it will be interesting. I mean, I'm kind of with you. They're going to have to win that game next week because they're not going to win both on the road at Oakland and Kansas City.
I don't know. That Oakland defense ain't all that. Say what you will about it.
No, and that's why I'm with you on that too. And that's, you know, that's why the Steelers, good gracious, I mean, the teams – Well, this game tonight will be
right, and I get what you're saying. If there's a why not us category, the Steelers probably number one seed in that.
Kansas City's probably thinking the same thing. I mean, look, I mean, they're playing as well as anybody right now, but the fact of the matter is, you know, that game's not going to be at Heinz Field. If it were at Heinz Field, they'd be scared out of their bejesus. But, you know, Chiefs beat the Steelers without Ben in Arrowhead last year, so they've got to be feeling pretty good about themselves as well.
You talk about this year's Steelers, I'm as shocked more than anybody when it comes to the progress this defense has made during the second half of the season. I mean, it's plain and simple. It's a heck of a turnaround, and it's a turnaround not because so much of injury. It's because of you're infusing in the talent that you drafted to be your future. It's not like you're saying, well, we had all these injuries and our backups have played well. It's more of a situation of our backups are now our starters because that's what we drafted them to be situation. I'm thoroughly impressed with what has happened.
There's another point there that is worth just noting, that it goes to show, one, the aggressive posture, I think, has been a big part of it. But two is
familiarity in playing with each other, too. I mean, look, you got Ryan Shazier back on the field playing with Lawrence Timmons now.
We can argue who the best defensive player is, and Cam Hayward would be in that conversation. But I know a lot of people want to close the book on the Steelers season when Cam Hayward got hurt. This is not a knock on Cam Hayward at all. He is as good a player as he was before all this happened. But they're doing it without Cam Hayward. And it just shows that you can win without a guy if you've got enough guys playing well. And that's what they have right now. And look, I'm also willing to acknowledge the competition. I think the Giants' offense is terrible. And they played the Browns and the Colts. And Tyrod Taylor is what he is. He's a guy at best. He's a mobile guy, but he's not – you know, and he can throw the ball, but he's not, you know, a quintessential – he's not a top 10, 12, 15 quarterback in the league. So let's be honest about that. So, you know, the next 2 weeks scare me. You know, maybe that's the way it's going to be. Each week's, you know, seems more difficult than the last because you've already got the win in the books. But they got the wins against two passing teams and a running team that they had to play different styles. They've won 3 out of 4 on the road. And if they get this one, that'll be 4 out of 5 on the road. That would be pretty damn impressive. And they did it without Ben playing well. So, you know, I think Sunday's game with the Cincinnati fascinates me, Dave. And probably, you know, if you had to pick the odds of this, you know, I think everybody wanted to pick the Steelers losing a game out of their last 5 because nobody likes to pick 5-game winning streaks. I thought they'd win them all. But this one against Cincinnati, to me, by far the most difficult. More difficult, I think, than the Ravens at home. Just because of the road venue, because of the relationship with the Bengals, this one really shapes up to be an interesting game.
I'm still more scared about the one against the Ravens. Look, I mean, facing Andy Dalton, and I'm going to assume no A.J. Green against the Steelers this week. Not having Bernard, Gio Bernard is also huge for that offense as well. Now, does this Bengals defense seem to know how to play against Roethlisberger in that passing game? Yeah, there's reason to think that you know Ben might have another struggle on the road again, right? I mean, right now there's no reason to think that he's not going to have a great game. Let's just leave it that way. Now, can the Steelers run the football in this one against the Bengals? I think so. But look, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm less worried about the Bengals than I am in the Ravens right now. And to think that we've gone almost 50 minutes and really haven't spent a lot of time talking about Ryan Shazier and the way he played against the Bills. That guy, when he's healthy, he is another guy that, you know, you talk about Le'Veon Bell looked like he was the only one given a choice of shoes to wear in the snow yesterday. Ryan Shazier looked like that. He was that guy on the defense as well, too. One of those early stops that he got in there and ducked under who was it, the fullback on that play. I don't know how he made that stop. I had to go back and watch that play 5 times. That guy, when healthy, and I know that's a big – got to put that in parentheses somewhere. That guy can get to point A and point B in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the year, I talked about him as defensive player of the year, and I don't think that's without merit. I mean, I think he is that good. Let me ask you this: has Le'Veon Bell put himself in the MVP discussion?
Yeah, I don't think he can go there because of the games that he's missed. And
Tom Brady's in the conversation. He missed one more than Bell.
Yeah, I don't think he can. Oh, you're talking Bell or Shazier?
Bell.
I thought you said Shazier. Nah. I don't think he's there yet. Now, if he goes out in these final 3 games and 150 total yards from scrimmage in each, couple of touchdowns, doesn't fumble the football. I suppose it's possible, David.
Well, who are you putting ahead of him right now? Russell Wilson is not in the conversation anymore for me.
Well, see, the ping pong, the narrative every week, well, it's David Carr. Well, there goes David Carr. It's Drew Brees. Oh, there goes Drew Brees with a Colt.
Yeah, he's Matt Ryan, Tom Brady would be the quarterbacks. Ezekiel Elliott would be the running back. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's next.
I think because of the consistency, how many games has he had total yards from scrimmage? Over 100 yards. I mean, that's
9 out of 10.
That's pretty impressive right there. Yeah. I don't think he's there where we can have you know, in other words, I think we'd still get pretty good odds on him not getting it. Now, will those odds lower?
Okay, if you had to make a list of five, would he be on it?
Oh, I'm not looking at a list in front of me right now, David. I'm trying to.
You know, Julio Jones didn't play yesterday. There's no receiver in it. There hadn't been enough good quarterbacks. And
I mean, Matthew Stafford even in that talk? Any?
I guess you could put Matthew Stafford and Derek Carr in there, and you could put Brady and Ryan in there. So that's four guys, and Zeke would be the other running back. I guess David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I think I've pretty much covered it saying those seven guys. I put a blanket on them. I'll give somebody the field versus those seven. But you know, he's still got a couple games to play. But missing three games, if it's out of 16, is a little different than missing three out of 13. So if he does it for three more games, then they matter. And he's third in the NFL in rushing right now, and he's just, you know, he's within 100 yards of the two guys ahead of him. Zeke's way ahead. As I said, he's way ahead in yards per game. You know, he's got touchdowns. He's got, you know, everything you want. I think this might put him in. He's gonna have to be good the next 2 weeks. But he is a dark horse MVP.
That's why I said if in these final three games, if he's well up over 100 total yards in all three of those games, all three are wins, and a couple flashy. You know, look, everybody likes to look at the touchdowns too, like it or not. Throw in a couple, you know, three touchdowns over the course of the last three games, and let's say 450 total yards of offense. Then you know, I think there's a,
or 600.
Oh yeah, I mean, if he gets 600 total yards, yeah, gonna be hard not to talk about him then, right? I just think it's tad like I said. I think we would still get pretty good odds right now, and those odds might be good enough when we go out and throw a larger denomination on it.
Yeah, I think it's something to think about. You're in the neighborhood, so take a look around, do some sniffing. What happens to beside the fact that Seattle was awful again, and Green Bay looks like they're the Steelers of the NFC right now, with Aaron Rodgers playing great and getting hot at the right time. Anything out of the NFC jump out at you this weekend? Playoff picture?
Boy, I didn't think we'd be sitting here this far along in the season talking about an Arizona Cardinals team that's 5-7-1. I didn't see that one coming. I don't think I saw Tampa Bay being 8-5 at this point of the season either, right? I mean, a testament to what's going on there. Minnesota, what's kind of happened there? Still getting pretty decent defensive play. Just, you know, the offense finally catching up with them, I guess. I still like their chances to get in, but where are all those people now that had Green Bay out of this thing a few weeks ago as well? I guess what I'm trying to say, outside of the Cowboys, and really did the Cowboys look that dominant in that game against the Giants? It's anybody's ball game over there in the NFC. It's as wide open in the NFC as I think as it might be in the AFC. And I understand why people want to crown New England right now. But I mean, look, we'll see when they go up against a decent defense tonight. What happens there? And make no mistake, the Patriots defense is not all that. So you get into the playoffs here. I guess my biggest takeaway would be right now is it's wide open.
It is wide open across the NFL. It should make for an interesting, a very interesting last 3 weeks.
Is it good for the NFL to have it wide open?
Sure. All fantastic. Right, having this many teams get back in it. Hey, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cincinnati. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, Dave. Well, it should, look, we'll see what Mike has to say tomorrow. We'll get ready for, all the talk of the week going into Cincinnati. A four-game win streak coming off a four-game losing streak and has made for a very interesting season. The Steelers still have the smallest amount of wiggle room to lose a game, but obviously, they would prefer to win all three and get home field advantage. Again, now the idea of they could play the Ravens twice in the last in the next 3 weeks after they get by Cincinnati. It's making for a fascinating season. It's going to be a fascinating storyline with what this defense has done, Ben's home road woes, what Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown continue to do. Just some fun stuff.
Regardless, and you kind of said put off this conversation, I think, a couple weeks ago when I brought it up there. What if this team runs the table? And regardless of what happens in the playoffs, okay, let's say they end this thing with what, an 11-5 record, right? How would you grade the coaching job, top to bottom on the Steelers? I mean,
same as I do every year. The way that has been going, that would be kind of a 7-1 second half with the only loss being to Dallas. They get better as the year goes on. You're going to look back and say, why some of the slow starts, why some trouble early in the season against teams that you're perceived to be able to beat, and could that be the difference between being a 3 seed and a 1 seed? But having said that, again, and we didn't mention this and it's probably overlooked. We probably should have mentioned this earlier. Mike Tomlin's 100th win. There was an article by Mike DeCourcy in the Sporting News about, if you don't think Tomlin's tenure has been great, then you have a bar that is – ridiculously high in terms of the standards. He's got the 10th highest. I know you wrote about this yesterday, right after the game. The 10th highest winning percentage in NFL history with guys with 100 wins. It's an august group of coaches that he's in the group with, and now never had a losing season for his first 10 years. All those types of things. I mean, give Keith Butler tons of kudos for getting it sorted out. If they can figure out how to find a second receiver, whether it's DHB the last week of the season or somehow they get Sammy Coates involved, even more from the offense. But, again, they're only going to go as far as Ben goes in terms of playing well. You can beat a team like Buffalo, but you're not going to win a lot of playoff games if your quarterback throws 3 interceptions and no touchdowns. So if there's one concern coming out of the game, it's Ben. But to answer your question more specifically, I would say, again, a very good coaching job. You go 11-5, that's a very good coaching job. And you got all your young guys in there.
Level of concern, percentage, where you are with this defense. I mean, take into account who they have played the last four games here. Versus where you were,
About half the level of concern I used to have. I used to be on a scale of 10, I was an 8, now I'm about a 4. I don't think they're going to go throw shutouts the rest of the way, but they seem to know what they're doing. They're playing fast. They're playing aggressive. They're going to give up plays. It's the nature of the NFL. It's not the nature of the team. It's the nature of the league that you're going to give up plays to talented guys. You rightly pointed out no A.J. Green and no Gio Bernard takes down my fear level of the Bengals a huge amount. But I like where this defense is right now. As I said last night on the Sports Showdown, I'm buying the Steelers defense right now.
I was hugely concerned about this defense several weeks ago, and you know, I'll keep reiterating how shocked I am at the, you know, the turnaround. Not only the turnaround on tape, but the statistical turnaround as well. Now, I still think this is a team that if they're going to win it all this year, it's going to have Roethlisberger is going to have a lot to do with that. Bell and Brown too, obviously. But you know, if you would have asked me 5 weeks ago, is this a team that could look, I mean, let's face it, you know, one or two times during a playoff run, a team probably needs their defense to win them a game. I would have said no chance of that, you know, several weeks ago. Now, is there a chance that the Pittsburgh defense can win them a game in the playoffs? I'm starting to come around a little bit to that, but, I don't know about you. I really am looking forward to this this game against the Ravens in a couple weeks, because this could be one of those marbles in the back of the schoolyard type situation right there.
Yeah, well, it all starts tonight too for the Ravens, so that'll be entertaining to watch as well. They lose the turnover battle 3-1, and they win a game rather convincingly. So. Pretty good stuff. And by the way, lots of talk. We talked about it last night about Le'Veon Bell versus Antonio Brown. Who's more important? Who'd you rather have? Who would you pay the money to if you could only pay one? Blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that on Wednesday as we get into the Bengals
The answer to that question is yes. Exactly. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David and Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. That will get many Fire Tomlin emails this week, but who knows? If you want to send one, send it to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show during the holiday season, you can do so by going to steelersdepot.com and hit the donate button upper right portion of the site. We'll be back to talk about Tomlin and the injury report and recap more of this game against the Bills on Wednesday and start looking ahead to the game against the Bengals as well.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.